When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, CarCast today is going to be fun. We're going to talk about the Ram TRX. We're going to talk about Corvette C8 and some track numbers on how that car performs and a lot more. Before we get started, right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You're never going to be able to save money like this again. Well, maybe not, but there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the Moderator DeAndre, with Bill Goldberg, coming in from Texas. And we welcome back, our good buddy Alistair Weaver from Edmonds. How are you, guys? Alistair, you good?
I'm very good, thank you, yes.
How you doing, Bill?
Peachy, top of the morning to you, gentlemen.
Well, we've got some exciting news to go through. As you guys are sure have heard, or for anybody's seen anything on social media, it's all about the Dodge TRX, the Ram TRX, or T-Rex. Maybe it's T-Rex. The video that they put out, though, was kind of funny, where the intro part and they're doing all the historical stuff and getting you excited and blah, blah, blah. And then there's the clip, I think, from Jurassic Park where the T-Rex grabs the raptor and throws it by its neck. And I was like, hey, wait a minute. So we got some Ram news to talk about. We want to talk about that truck. And Edmunds got the C8 Corvette in that you guys ordered, right? So
only about 10 months late.
Right. So nothing like a last minute deal.
Is the Bronc open?
Yeah,
the frunk does open. Yeah,
does it close? Does it stay closed? They're working on that.
They're working on that, I think. Yeah, we got it just as there was the recall announced. But I think we ordered this thing. I actually forget when we ordered it because I think we ordered it super early, and then it was going to be built in December, and then there's the whole UAW strike. Then it was going to be built in January, and then that was delayed, the strike, and then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So it was eventually built last month, and we took delivery literally a week ago. We've taken you down the test track. I can reveal.
Yeah, we want to get into some of the numbers and stuff on that because we haven't had a chance to drive one over here. But there are a handful that are out there. So I'm sure other people have numbers, but we want to get into yours because there's obviously it's a consistency in how you test things. I know that you guys ordered your C8 around the time you ordered your Orange GT500. So that kind of gives us some reference as to what you guys even put the orders in, right?
Yeah, so it's been months. Test figures from our track for the GT500 and the Corvette, because they're basically the same price. But obviously, Corvette's giving away a huge amount of horsepower, but it's pretty interesting reading. Or listening, actually.
Both cars seem incredibly fun and wildly different, but similarly priced. Is your C8 orange as well?
No, the C8's blue, so it's a really kind of bright blue, like a cyan blue.
Yeah, I liked that blue when I saw it. I thought it was one of the better colors out there. Before we get started, just a reminder from our friends at Dodge. It's time for Dodge Power Dollars. This means for each horsepower, you get $10 off your purchase of a Dodge Charger, Challenger, and Durango. So come in for a Dodge Power Dollars today for a pretty sweet deal. Speaking of, new Dodge Ram TRX, it got announced, and 9.5 seconds later, Bill's on the phone trying to get one. Did you Did you get your Dodge Power Dollars?
9.5 seconds later. Are you kidding me? I'm not losing my touch. It was 2.5 seconds. Actually, it was simultaneously. It was as the launch was going.
Yeah.
I did my deal where I went to the site and then I called Trussell at the same time. I should have known not to call him during the middle of the launch. I mean, that's pretty insensitive. But, you know, a man needs information before he can click that button. And actually, you couldn't order it until the next day. So.
So you got an order in. Let me guess. Black on black. Launch edition. All the options.
Launch edition. 702 units. They only come in Anvil, which is similar to the Destroyer Gray.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna be like 701 other people, and then I'm gonna wrap mine in black instantly. So yeah, I'll have the best of both. Best of both worlds. So you were correct. But you were incorrect at the same time.
So
I kind of like that anvil. That anvil looks nice. I've only seen the pictures of it, but it looks kind of nice, that, and a little bit different.
Yeah, Trussell says it's got like a bluish hue to it. So I'm curious to see it. I like the Destroyer Gray. He didn't get one, it sounds like, because he's already got a number of Destroyer Gray Challengers and similar vehicles. But yeah, that's the only color that the first edition is going to be offered in. Evidently, they're going to start building them in October. And then 2-3 months later, you can start ordering the other TRXs. But yeah, I'm very excited. My question to both of you guys, though, and it's a question that's been festering for a number of years. You have these launches, or not these launches, but you have these, I'm not going to even say debuts. You have these teasers go out talking about, you know, a future product being put out that people are going to jump out of their seats for. And you get people excited about it, and then 2, 3, 5, 10 years later, it's still not there. Now, you've seen a different number of manufacturers go about it in different ways. But my question is, once you get the hype of like a TRX or the new Bronco coming out, how quickly do they have to get this thing out to market before people lose that enthusiasm that you struck immediately by posting the potential for that vehicle to come out?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because Bronco seems like it's being teased for a decade now. I mean, it just seems like that one was back at the time where, and Alistair, you can chime in on this, but there was a time where they would do a concept car that was, you know, maybe 80% of what a real car could be, but now budgets don't really allow for that. You know, like the concept car that debuts needs to be much closer to a production car. A very good example would be
the Porsche.
Yes.
The electric Porsche. Remember how beautiful it was, the first rendering that we saw?
Yeah.
And remember how I fell head over heels in love with it?
Mm-hmm.
But when it came out, it was, I think it was visually a far departure from what they originally put out.
There was definitely some changes on that. I think it was Monterey last year. We saw the Acura TLX or whatever Type S that they were going to do. And then they brought that same concept car to SEMA. And now they're getting ready to roll it out, and they're releasing horsepower numbers. And it looks very similar. You know, whatever. One had shaved door handles and no mirrors. And this one, you know, obviously has door handles and mirrors, you know. But there's not a huge departure between, like, the concept car for Acura and their production car. And it seems like it's hitting the market quickly.
Well, yeah, the thing is, you have to remember that most of the time, these cars are designed generally about 3 to 5 years out, typically. So this is kind of what get you, it's sometimes hard to get your head around. I've actually been in design studios and seen stuff that's literally 5 years away, because it takes that long from a kind of basic design freeze to then do all the engineering. So what they end up doing, and we've seen this time and again, is you actually do a concept car after you've got the production car. So you know what the real thing looks like. And then you kind of reverse engineer the concept car so that you basically tease it up without giving too much away, but at the same time not creating too much excitement. So to Bill's point, you go, you know, that's not quite what I was hoping it was. So they're always kind of playing this game with you. It also depends whether there's a vehicle in the market. So if you look at something like the BMW X7, BMW didn't have a big three-row SUV, so they could tease that thing miles out. But if they had an existing X7, then you don't want to tease the new one too far out, because there's a fear that you hamper sales of the current model.
Yeah.
So it's this constant dance that they're playing. I mean, one example we're talking about, like Honda NSX or Acura NSX over here. I think that was like 6 years from us seeing what was basically the finished car to it going on sale. And by the time you actually drove the thing, it was like, yeah, this thing's really old.
Don't you see resentment towards that manufacturer if they play you along too long, if they string you along too long and then either come out with something vastly different or not coming out with it at all? You know, I mean, I know there's a lot of factors that play into it, whether it be, you know, Corona, whether it be the vehicles you have out on the market or the competitors. But, you know, you can only tease people for so long before they're like, yeah, you know, you're crying wolf again. We're not going to expect that one. We're not going to get, you know, enthusiastic about it. I'm just wondering, you know, what that sweet spot is. Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Is it 4 years and you're going to lose interest? And it's just crazy how we're seeing it play out in front of our eyes.
You know, to
it
Alex,
was almost. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, to your point, Alistair, though, there is a difference between, let's say, Bronco, which is fresh and new, and Corvette C8, which is pretty new, even though there's an existing Corvette, versus the Ram TRX. We have a Ram, we have a truck, and this is a hotter version of the existing truck. So, yeah, you could kick around the concept idea, but you can't debut it today and then launch it, you know, 22 months from now, because there is a platform there already, right? But for Bronco, because it's basically ground up, not Bronco Sport, I know that's basically got some Ford Escape underneath it, although that's pretty new as well. I think there is a difference between, look, you mentioned Porsche. We have the new Porsche platform, right? And but now they need to start quickly rolling out, like, whatever, Turbo and then Turbo S or vice versa, and then Targa, and then, you know, GT2, GT3. Like, they can't have those things roll out 5 years after the 911 came out, because they're getting ready for a new 911 at that point, right? So there is a certain amount
already.
Of time for new cars versus revisions to the existing platform.
There's so much science goes into that, managing a life cycle. So if your car lasts 7 years, if it's like a luxury car or something, how you manage that 7 years, midway through you do like a little facelift where you just tweak a few things, you spend as little money as possible. And then you have to do little things, whether it's special editions or hot versions or whatever, which is why things like Focus RS came out so late and everything else, because they're desperately trying to create a halo for the rest of the range. So it's all, I say, it's a dance, it's a game that they're constantly playing.
Do you think the time in between models for revisions and facelifts is going to decrease? Because now we live in a world of iPhones and things like that that are constantly changing. I mean, for better or worse, an example we've brought up many times is Toyota Supra. Supra came out and people are probably still waiting for theirs or just getting theirs, and already new Supra with a lot more horsepower is on its way. You know, there's a whole discussion about, like, what did you get and do you feel bad about it? Did you pay a markup? Blah, blah, blah. But is that going to become the normal thing? Would it be more revisions? Should we expect a car model to be revised a little bit each year, maybe some nips and tucks, or we've got better tech, or our infotainment is faster, or whatever, especially with over-the-air updates?
I mean, model years, there's always little tweaks, new colors, little trims, that sort of thing for each model year. There's always like a subtle revision. But yeah, I mean, Supra's a really interesting case in point, but it created a lot of buzz for a very short amount of time. It was like a sparkler, you know, it burned bright for 30 seconds and then disappeared. And even looking at our films, well, a barometer of it is like how well our films do on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And Supra stuff is just not performing for us. Once you'd had that initial burst of excitement, and maybe that's also why they come in with a special edition. As soon as you see people come really early with special editions, a bit more horsepower and a bit of this and that, it's just because it's not performing for them. And they're desperately trying to try things to get it moving. The other interesting about over-the-air stuff is, yeah, I was talking to a friend, as soon as you can get Apple CarPlay, then actually getting the latest model becomes less and less important, because actually what you're normally buying is you want the tech, you want the navigation, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you go back 3 years now and a car's got Apple CarPlay, then actually you've kind of got the latest tech. for most of the stuff that you're using all the time.
Yeah.
So it becomes less important.
Yeah. Okay. Let's.
That's in my view.
Let's talk a little bit about the RAM TRX. We're going to have to get into it, of course. So let's, Alistair, tell us what you know about it based on, I don't know, it's just from insider trading versus what the video is. I can tell you guys this. Just before I got here, I spoke to Dodge, and they told me that their invitational press event will be in October, and I guess I can say it's in Tahoe, but it's going to be in October, Tahoe, and then the press fleet will start filling up right after that. So as far as when you may get one, Bill, being sort of a preferred customer, if you will, versus when the media will start to test them, we're probably looking at a mid to end of October at the earliest before we are able to start driving them. Anyway, that's kind of what I've got so far. I don't know, Alistair, if you're if they told you that information yet or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It's funny, we just done a film of Power Wagon versus Tremor, which instantly looks out of date now. and we did Power Wagon versus Raptor, the decisions you make that prove erroneous. But yeah, I mean, it's a relatively obvious thing to do, isn't it? Drop the Hellcat engine into a truck and give it a retune. So we've got 702 horsepower, 650 pounds-feet of torque. They're claiming 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds. I mean, that's insane for an off-road truck. Fuel consumption will probably be in the negatives, but
I'll verify that.
Yeah. I'm sure you will.
It'll be gallons per mile.
What is the 0 to 60 of the Raptor? Do we know? I'm sure you have it somewhere. I'll just throw that out there, and you could send out the the bat signal to see if you recall. But
I can't remember the top of my head.
But that was one of the things somebody asked me right away. Was I said, "Hey, the 702 horsepower, 0 to 60, 4.5 seconds for the TRX," and they said, "Well, what's the Raptor?" And I was like, "I don't know, 6. I mean, it seems quick, but it's not break your neck fast, but it seems quick." And I think Ram is saying they've got, of course, it's a lot of marketing terms and this and that, but they're saying they've got the most sophisticated shock, the most off-road worthy shock on it, which is cool. I mean, I love that they're doing all of that. And I think one of the benefits of the Raptor is its ability to do high speed off-road. It's actually a very comfortable vehicle to drive, even around here, around town, getting on the 405 and a bumpy freeway. That thing just glides over a freeway. It's one of the nicest things to drive. Sure, there's a little bit of body roll and some wobble back and forth, brake dive because of the, but yeah, it's one of the nicest suspensions that's out there. So I'd be curious to see how Ram will perform with it, but what else do we know about it?
The biggest thing about around as a road going vehicle, I mean, depending where you live in the country, maybe okay in Texas, is just how wide it is, because it's a Ram 1500 with a
six bigger inches.
Yeah, with big arches. So it's going to be for you and I living in LA, Matt, it's going to be a monster to drive.
It will be a monster to drive. I hear squeaking. Yeah. I don't know what that squeaking noise is. Is that Bob?
That's Bob.
That's Bob. Bob is on the air. Bob is a tiny bird. I see Chris freaking out in the studio going, "What the hell is that squeaking noise?"
Sorry, man. And I can't put a muzzle on it. I wish I could. I'm trying to teach him how to be a bird.
I thought it was like, is Goldberg using like an old thigh master or something that we can't see?
I'm Mr. Mom, dude. I'm multi. Give me a break.
Okay, it's Bob. I didn't
know. Bob is the rescue bird. that he's been hand feeding and teaching.
We're trying to teach him how to fly, man. Anybody out there that knows how to teach a bird how to fly, please let me know.
And yes, don't other birds.
Don't give me the pick him up and throw him in the air thing.
No, other birds teach birds how to fly. People don't.
Why do you
this?
Think we're outside? I'm trying to give him, you know, he can learn through osmosis, watch his friends fly around. I don't know what.
Anyway, so that's what it is. So if it's driving you nuts, it's because he's.
I'm such a badass. I got a little bird named Bob.
He's got a little bird named Bob, and he's got to babysit the bird for today. So apparently, Bob has a lot to say.
Man. Chill, buddy. It's all good.
It is so loud. He's so loud. I don't know why. It's just he's so loud. Okay.
Go quiet down in a second.
I lost my train of thought. All right. So Ram TRX, wider than a Raptor. Bigger than a Raptor?
I think it's going to be similar. I mean, the other thing we should discuss is there's a pretty persistent rumor. I haven't got this officially confirmed that they're going to drop. I think Ford is going to respond by dropping the GT500 engine potentially into the F-150, into the Raptor.
Into the Raptor, yeah. So it's kind of interesting because for a second they were like, "Hey, we should really focus on some fuel economy to go with our super off-road vehicle." But now they're like, no, that's not what people really wanted. It's not really what people wanted. They wanted – look, it's weird when you look at our CAFE standards and our fight for fuel economy, all it did was amp up our horsepower wars. It's who can make the most horsepower now – through more efficient means, right? Through more fuel efficient gas engines, turbocharging, supercharging, hybrid technology, electric motors, and Alistair, maybe you could explain this better than I can. These cars with these 48 volt systems, but they don't have an electric motor. But somehow,
yeah, it's like a mild hybrid thing. Yeah,
but it creates horsepower. Like we talked about the Gordon Murray T50, and he's like, I don't know what he said. He said something like 649 horsepower, but 690 in an instant when you need it without adding a battery or a hybrid motor. And he's like, with the 48 volt system, and now we're starting to see that. Come up with a couple of other vehicles saying, "Oh, we could give you a little power." How are they creating a power boost with just with this higher voltage system? But where's the power going? How are they putting it to the ground?
Well, it's all about how you fire up the an electric motor and how you basically deploy current. So, yeah, I mean, it is super interesting. We're talking about Raptors with GD500 engines, but actually the hybrid one. You know, the hybrid one is going to be insane just because you've got all that instantaneous torque.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's almost like that. Oh, I mean, it's funny that they call the TRX after a dinosaur, isn't it? But it's going to be, you know, I think that hybrid F-150 is going to be an interesting match in straight line terms just because you're going to have so much torque, so much grunt.
What's the weight difference? That's my question.
We're a little bit out there, far away for the F-150 hybrid to know that. I mean, it will add, it depends. You're going to trade a bit on the gas engine for obviously additional weight for the batteries and everything else. I don't know how long they get, how much range, because that'll all depend on how much range they want as to how much battery they have to put in. But bear in mind, as a percentage of the overall weight, it's not like you're strapping batteries to a Prius. You know, adding mass to an F-150 or a Ram 1500 doesn't make that much difference.
Also, if it's low and it's in the middle, and you're right, if you go to smaller engine, you can add some battery weight. If you go to smaller fuel tank, sure, you can add some battery weight. I think, Alistair, maybe a good example would be in Ford's world, a Lincoln Aviator gas engine turbo versus Lincoln Aviator hybrid turbo, right? Like, you know, the smaller fuel tank, a little bit different configuration. Where are they putting the weight, and what sort of additional power and torque do you get? And we are seeing, like to your point, the hybrid versions of vehicles are turning out to be the quicker versions. Anything from a RAV4 hybrid is more horsepower and quicker.
That thing's crazy fast. The RAV4 Prime,
yeah,
the plug-in one,
and That's kind of interesting. So yeah, F-150 hybrid. When do we start getting into modifying this? And I meant to ask this to the Acura guys, because it was one of the first things that came up. Is the Acura NSX cool car, and historically has been oftentimes modified quite a bit. New Acura NSX comes out, and it's hybrid, and it has electric motors on the front. But let's say you do something simple, like you're working on your cold air intake for the gas engine, or you're gonna tune it or something and put the gas engine on a dyno to get a little more horsepower out of it. How does it work with the electric drivetrain? If I imagine right now it's so smartly paired together, what it goes on and off and the amount of power that it does combined. But if you start hot rodding one aspect of it, what does it do to the other half of the car, right? What does it do to the electric half if you hot rod the gas engine half?
Yeah, because sometimes these things are not just about going fast in a straight line. They're actually using the torque from the electric motors to manage the handling as well.
Oh yeah.
So you need the computers to understand what the hell's going on, and if suddenly they get an entirely different signal, it's going to. The straight answer is I don't really know, Matt, and maybe somebody listening can help us out with this. How you get into tuning it, because everything is so much in sync now, and it's not a case of, you know, the hybrid systems being used, and Ferrari's good at this as well. You know, the hybrid systems are being used to support the performance, and to not just in a straight line, but how it handles and how it deals with understeer and oversteer. So yeah, if you start playing with one, it's bound to have a compound impact on everything else.
You know, look,
I'm just going to assume that it's not entering a code will wipe everything out. I'm assuming it's going to be a little more involved in that.
You're right. Are there fail safes built in? Does it start to shut something down? Does it start to say, "Hey, you're overspinning this, or over revving that, or how, you know, sort of how does that? I wonder how that works." Look, in the world of Ferrari and McLaren, maybe this is a little bit less of an issue because those cars are already batshit crazy fast. There's not a lot of modifications you're going to do. Most of the mods in those cars are, you know, it's visual appearance. You're doing wheels and different wraps and things like that. But as this starts to trickle down to more of a higher volume vehicle, you know, I mentioned NSX because they've been hot rodded in the past, but there's not a lot of those new NSXs on the road. But when you start getting into something like F-150, hybrid F-150, there's a shit ton of Ford F-150s out on there with aftermarket exhaust and cat-back exhaust and high flow filters and cold air intakes and tuners and chips and dash mounted screens that, you know, increase towing or increase, you know, miles per gallon or extra horsepower, and everybody out there from banks and whatever are tuning these things. What does it do to a hybrid version of that vehicle? You know, if you take your, I don't know, if the Ford F-150 hybrid is a 4-cylinder or 6-cylinder, but if it's 250 horsepower and you add 40 extra horsepower to the gas engine, what is it going to do to the hybrid technology that's, you know, pairing it up, especially if it's got, you know, electric motors on the front wheels and gas engine powering the rear wheels? I'm just curious how that's going to happen. And I got to imagine that the car companies at some point are going, yeah, we did think about that. Or someone's going, I don't know, let's just try it. Let's see what happens, right? Do you think the guys at Acura are going, I don't know, let's add 40 horsepower to the gas engine, see what happens. See what kind of lights fire up on the dashboard and check engine lights and stuff.
Well, they already do it a little bit for like octane ratings, like 93, 91, 89 or whatever.
Okay, that's
they
a good already- point. There you go.
They have it in built into the ECU so that if you have a, you know, you put different gas in, then the car will manage that. I guess the thing is when you're surprising it, isn't it? When you're suddenly throwing like a 110 octane fuel into it.
Yeah. There's probably a cap on it, right? So, yeah, now these days the engines are so sophisticated, the computers in them, the knock sensors and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where Ford for a while specifically and other car companies are saying, hey, you want a new Mustang GT? You want a 5.0 Mustang? Sure, it's got 460 horsepower on 93 octane, but you don't have to run the 93. You can run it on 87. You want to save a couple bucks? It'll cut, I don't know, 27 horsepower off your car, but you can run it on 87 all day long. And then when you want the extra horsepower, just fill it up with the good juice, and the computer will figure it out and give you the extra horsepower. So they're saying that's a cost thing. It's a I wouldn't say fuel efficiency thing as much as it is a cost thing. And you don't have to fill it up on premium all the time. You know, and in California, we've got all shit gas anyway, so who knows how much horsepower we're making with our cars. It's interesting because so many of the publications like Edmunds are here in California. And when you guys test, do you load up on VP fuel or do you just roll up to the Chevron and put our crappy 91 in there and then
yeah, we roll on 91.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so all the numbers are just else. So I don't know, maybe the Ram TRX does 4.5 seconds 0 to 60 in Texas but not in California.
Come out here and get some more kind of fuel.
Yeah, right?
You get Bill to turn up with a can.
Turn up with a can.
I dread to think. Well, like my biggest fear is what that thing would do to our test track. Whether we can even just. I mean, honestly, things are getting so far. I know we have like a little bump in our straight line test, and normally there's no issue. But some of this stuff gets so fast now. Like the GT500, you can actually hear the revs go. Phew, a little bit over the bump just because it's getting so
it loses so a little bit of traction, right? And it just revs.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Fantastic. So I assume you haven't gotten any other information or an inside track or look at the TRX. Is there anything that you know that you can share with us?
No, I think the other interesting, I'm due to have a little drive in a short while of the V8 Wrangler, which obviously isn't a Hellcat engine. We talked about that last time I was on, and it's kind of interesting, isn't it? You almost feel like the impact of that vehicle is going to be diminished a little bit, because everybody's like, oh, we've got a V8 Wrangler, and it's like, oh yeah, but now we've got a TRX.
Yeah, now you got a TRX.
Yeah.
And there's always the group of guys who love the fact that the 392 is offered, but they still want the Hellcat motor in there.
Yeah, and that's the question I'll be asking is to why. You know, is that limit? We talked about cooling or even packaging. Why can they not drop that engine in?
Maybe it's a marketing thing. Maybe they wanted something in the middle. They wanted the Jeep to fit in the middle of you know, normal Jeep and normal Ram versus TRX with supercharger.
Yeah, it's possible that V8 will be a, you know, reasonably sensible everyday car, won't it? In a way that anything with a Hellcat engine is a bit more of a leap.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what the fuel efficiency difference would be between the two engines. You know, I don't know if I guess we could compare. We'd have to dig into, let's say, you know, a Challenger 392 versus Hellcat, you know.
All I can say is that our GT500's economy is abysmal in real life.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're averaging the low teens.
Yeah, but when you're in it, it's your fault. it's mostly your fault because you have that sound and you want to get on it, and no, there's not a lot of just putting around town casually in the GT500. It's definitely a show-off vehicle. I think this the TRX is going to be interesting in sort of the same vein, more so, Bill, in your world, because you have the big property and it's funded, like, just take it off into the dirt or do whatever with it, like you can do with some of your vehicles. Not all of your vehicles. You've got the hot rods, right? You've got the Challengers and the Chargers.
That void perfectly.
Yeah, and then there's going to be a world of you know, your guys at Gearhead are going to say, oh, well, bring that thing over here. Let's make a 1,200 horsepower, you know, truck, right? Because they can. And also they're working on GT500s and stuff as well. But okay, so that's where we are with TRX. I think, what was the starting price? 69,000 and change, 70,000 bucks, basically. I went onto the configurator to click a few things, and it was like, yeah, it's getting into the $80,000 range.
Who guessed in the 80s? Was that you, Matt?
I think we were saying, well, we were trying to compare to the Raptor, that I think it would be a little bit above, probably in the 70s range before options. So 70 was
Yeah, let's just say first edition's coming in around 90 something.
Yeah, I think
So with tax, 100 grand.
Yeah, with tax. So
thanks,
now,
man. It was hard to gulp the 90. Thanks for popping it up to 100 for me.
I think fully loaded launch edition with everything is about 93,000. I think that's kind of where
93.7.
Well, there you go. And you're right, with the tax and everything, you're 100 grand. And
but what else are you gonna buy for 100 grand?
Oh, wow. There's quite a bit. Well, you bought your C8 and your GT500 for less than 100 grand. So,
for sure.
There's that argument as well. By the way, you could obviously spend 100,000 or more on both of those cars. The question is, I lost my train of thought, but at 100,000, at 93,000, whatever, is this now the most expensive truck in its category? Do we have a King Ranch or something? I think 93,000 is the most you can spend on a truck in that category of that size. So congratulations, Ram.
Maybe that was another crowd they were going after.
Yeah. Well, look, it seems like F-150 has been racing to make a $100,000 F-150 at some point. And
Dodge beat them to it.
And I guess they beat them to it. But I don't know. I always thought some version of like new F-150 Platinum, fully loaded, four-wheel drive, hybrid, whatever, starts to get you into the $100,000 range, but maybe it's not going to quite get you there. But
it'll get you into the 80-90.
Yeah, but you're right. If a Raptor with a GT500 engine comes out, I think you guys are going to be competing for price. But that's going to be a tough one because we already have a GT500. We know the prices of those. So does the Raptor have a premium on that? I don't think so. I think it needs to come in a little less than GT5. I mean, base price and then fully loaded price are kind of two different things. But, you know, we're at 93.
No, we were wrong on that philosophy with Dodge.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd be able to option it up to 93,000. And options are where the options list are where car companies are making their money. If anybody,
I think the first edition package came in right under 13.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was like 12 or 13,000, and everyone's just taking a page out of the Porsche option guide of profitability.
You know, I've got one this week which really wowed me. We've got a 911 Carrera, which is a lovely car. I actually think it's my favorite 911, including the Turbo S. As a road car, it's just lovely, and it's but they're charging $1,000 for lane change keeping assist. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that basically helps you if you're wandering out your lane and that sort of thing. $1,000. You can get that on like a $20,000 Nissan for standard.
Yeah, standard.
It was funny. The same. That box was on the TRX also, but fortunately it comes in the first edition.
Oh, so you only had to pay $13,000 to get it included. It's funny.
I didn't want it. For a grand, I didn't want it. I didn't want it for free. But
the thing is, you can't wander out the lane, so it's going to be wider than the lane.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah, it's wider than the lane you're in anyway, so what difference does it make?
It'll always go off.
Yeah, it'll just be flashing in the corners the whole time. There's always something there. What is it? It's trees. It's buildings. It's like it's not another
it's
car.
Fender.
I watched your film about the new Nissan Rogue, and right, I think it's Rogue. You did, Alistair. And that's an example of here's something that is more mass market. It comes with all the features you could possibly imagine. And now everything with diamond stitch interiors on the seats and all the technology and lane keep assist and anti-collision this and that and whatever, whatever, whatever. And nowhere near the price that we're talking about with a fully featured out Rogue, right? So
yeah, fully featured out, it's going to be 40 grandish. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so it makes you start to question the options list. I think I was just playing around with a Nissan NSX configurator, and the carpets, I don't know if it comes with floor mats or if it's optional or it's the plush floor mat option. It was like $1,200. You know, there's only two seats in that car, right? This isn't three rows. This isn't like it came with 18 pieces of carpet. This is, you know, floor mats. There's two. That's quite a bit. That's, I don't know. We're looking at $600 per carpet, per floor mat. Seems like a lot. All right. So let's get into a Corvette C8. You guys took delivery of the C8, and I don't know if you've tested it against your GT500 for the sake of colors on the screen, or you've just compared the list. But what's your thoughts, C8?
Well, you might imagine that we might be shooting a film of GT500 and C8 coming up. C8 is – it's so just remind me, I know we talked about this, so I actually have the Munroney here, is – so we went for the standard car. We then added the Z51 sort of track package, sports seat. So we added 20 grand of options. So we ended up paying 80,660 as a sticker price. So 2LT, which is the kind of like mid-spec trim, which gives you the kind of gadgets that you want. Z51 performance package, which is the brakes, the suspension, the exhaust, the rear axle ratio, the slippy diff, etc. I'd say you want that. Magnetic ride control, GT2 seats, front lift.
Oh, yeah.
Seconds critical. And then things like red great calipers, and I wanted some red seat belts, which are slightly indulgent, but it looks cool in the pictures.
Yeah.
So we ended up spending 80,660 on it, which is probably the sweet spot. Yeah, you don't need red seat belts, but you can. It's that kind of range.
What did you pay for the GT500?
About the same. We went for a GD500. We optioned it up a little bit, but didn't go for the full carbon pack, which is 20 grand. So again, we kind of went for what we thought was the sweet spot. So you have the Gurney flap, which I think looks way cooler than the big rear wing anyway.
So for your GT500, you went with the handling pack, but not the full carbon track pack. And you can't get the track pack and the handling pack. It's one or the other or none at all.
Good knowledge. That's right. Yeah. So you don't get the carbon wheels and stuff, but... you know, honestly, there was only like another 20 grand, and we thought this was actually the better package. We actually have had both of them on the test track, and it's kind of interesting because the Corvette's got 495 horsepower, the GT500's got 760.
Mm-hmm. What do they weigh? Did you figure out what they weighed?
Yeah, we weighed them. The Corvette has 3649 pounds, so 3,650 pounds. Weight distribution 40-60, front to rear. GT500, 4,168 pounds. So basically about 500 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
And 56-44 front to rear weight distribution. So pounds per horsepower, which is always the figure I'm always really interested in. 7.4 for the Vette, 5.5 for the GT500. And interesting, we've just run a normal Carrera, 911 Carrera, 8.9 pounds per horsepower. But when you get into the 0 to 60, of course, it's all about traction and how it launches. So Corvette 3.4 seconds, GT500 3.7, just because you struggle that much more to put the power down. And wait for this: a standard Carrera with 379 horsepower, so a lot less, 3.6. So only just outside the Corvette. I mean, it's crazy that a standard 911 Carrera now with 379 horsepower, 3.6 seconds to 60. And that's all about the tires and the weight distribution,
yeah,
the way that that transmission works and actually deploys the power.
Just out of curiosity, when you do those launches, do you try them with the launch control versus your foot, you know, just feeling it out? And are you finding one being better than the other? When launch control came out on these vehicles, a really good hot shoe was faster than the launch control. But now the launch control is getting better.
We still beat it.
You still beat it. Okay,
yeah.
So a GT500 is 3.7 0 to 60 doing it on your own.
Yeah, so we generally, you know, we will always test with both and stuff. We'll also test on rollouts as well. But yeah, generally speaking, you know, we do this all the time. So we will generally beat the system. So on a GT500, and actually doing this myself at the end of the week on a circuit, yeah, you'll tend to have your left foot on the brake, but only a little bit. So you're not building up too much revs. You're just wanting to get the engine fired. Then you'll just roll your left foot off, and then you have to deploy it. You know, you can't just jump on it, because otherwise you'll just sit there with the wheel spinning. So traction off, and then just, you know, as soon as you start to see it bite, then you're feeding it in with greater force. It's interesting. I've got the quarter miles here as well, which is more instructive. So quarter of a mile for the Corvette, 11.5 at 119.7. GT500, this is where it kind of comes through the pack, 11.3 at 130. So 10 miles an hour faster. But you look at
that's the horsepower, right? That's the horsepower now doing...
And both are now ahead of the Carrera, but only just. Standard Carrera, 11.8 at 116.8. So it's interesting, isn't it? Like, we always talk about horsepower, but having good horsepower properly deployed and the weight in the right place and everything else still makes a huge difference. And you lose the bragging rights, but actually, you know, when you look at the hard numbers, it's a slightly different story. And we found it really interesting. But the Corvette is... I've actually got it in my garage at the moment. I'm heading up to Willow Springs with it on Thursday. It's a lovely thing. There's a few things I don't like. I think you sit a bit high in it. And those bucket seats, I mean, I'm like built like a stick insect, and it's squeezing my buttocks. So I don't know how Bill would get on in it. But
you just said Bill has a fat ass. Thanks.
I'll wear it like a suit.
Bill has a more sculptured, broader backside. But, it's a cool thing. The only other thing is, again, we're talking about cars that are really wide. When you look at how big, I mean, think about a 911, the new 911 is big. And we always talk about how much bigger the 911's got.
Yeah.
Corvette is super wide. You know, it's a big vehicle. But it sounds fantastic. It steers nicely, not as nicely as the 911, but it still steers nicely. The ride quality is the thing that really shines out for me. I've just driven it back down to 405, and actually it's super plush ride. I mean, it's a nice everyday car, and yet it's a mid-engine supercar-esque thing, which gives you know that it feels special. It feels a lot more special than the previous generation car.
How,
definitely.
How much was the Carrera that you tested that ran 3.6?
That was it comes in about 150. There are 100 to start with, and then with the option. But to be honest, the only performance options were Sport Chrono. So it's about 105. Then you've got like $5,000 of leather and fancy seats. So, you know, you don't actually have to put that much on them, certainly from a performance perspective. There's no tricky, there's none of the tricky steering or the rear steering, anything like that. It's fairly pretty standard car.
What's your verdict on C8 versus GT500? For your money, what car are you buying?
Well, funny you should say that. We're actually about to go and do something quite special with it, with both of them. So I might have to come on next time, actually, Matt, and we may or may not. I never want to give away too much because, you know, maybe people are listening. But we may
maybe
be back to
people are listening.
Maybe people are listening.
All right, so you're going to do a video on those cars. You did the track video, but you're going to do some Willow Springs stuff. You guys are going to go and. You got to do a little head to head on what I mean. I don't think that the Carrera applies. It's $25,000 more money, you know, similarly equipped. So I don't know if that's what you're cross shopping. Maybe you can throw, you know, the Hellcat or something in there. But obviously, that's been out for a little while, so we know the numbers on those. But GT500 versus C8. My question is, with all of the delays on producing C8 and rolling it out and delivering it to customers that have been waiting months and months, do they have to delay any hotter version of it? Z06, ZR1, hybrid, flat plan crank, all the rumors that we're hearing. Is it going to be too close? Is it going to feel like Supra, and then next year we had, you know, Supra, you know, with more horsepower? Is the C8 already going to feel that way?
It's interesting because you say, I mean, like, ours arrived and it was a bit like, you know, you're right. You have that initial wave of excitement. We've got it on order. And then by the time you're sort of, 8 months later, there is a bit where your enthusiasm kind of wanes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they need to give this car its life a little bit, and then Z06 will be the next one, and yeah, flat pane cranks and all the rest of it. The other thing is, like, how it comes out of these comms got, like, how much performance do you really need? Like, you know, they've put the baseline in for 60 grand that you've got a car that's in the low threes to 60, and he's running, you know, 1G on our skid pan and everything else. It's like, this thing's just going to get nuttier and nuttier. I mean, where's the ZR1 land?
Right. Yeah. It's going to be, you know, but that's kind of what we love about it, right?
I do wonder if in like 10 years' time, we'll be looking back and say, God, can you imagine when cars were doing like 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds? That's rubbish.
Yeah. what did you joke back then? All right. So let me tell you guys again about Dodge. Summertime is the best time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle, because Dodge Power Dollars means you get a guaranteed discount. The math is simple. You get $10 off based on the total horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle. So that applies to every Dodge, every 2020 Challenger, every 2020 Durango, every 2020 Charger. You get the most out of your horsepower this summer. With $10 off for each horsepower, that means you can roll into the dealer. You can pick up a Dodge Charger SRT Scat Pack. It's got 485 horsepower, so you'll get $4,850 off. And this summer, Dodge Power Dollars is back on the Dodge Durango as well. So no matter where the summer takes you, the Dodge Durango is here to make every trip this season a breeze. Get more power, get more off. It's that simple. Hurry into your local Dodge dealer now to take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. All right. Well, I can't wait to see the videos and the more details of the stuff that you guys are doing on those cars. The TRX is going to be a fun vehicle for sure. It's definitely opulent. It's meant to be a toy for sure. I'm sure we're going to see them rolling around all over LA for some ungodly reason. And you're right. Good luck trying to park it. I mean, not only can you not get it in half the spots, but and on the roads, but I don't know how you get it into half the parking garages we have out here anyway. So it should be interesting. I can't wait to drive one and kind of get your hands on it. And it's weird because in the world of these super SUVs and the super trucks and all the things that we're seeing out now, you know, Lamborghini SUV and X5M competition. I mean, we have trucks that weigh 5,000 something pounds, 5,500 pounds that are doing 0 to 60 and 3.5 seconds. I don't know how fast that Lamborghini is. I forgot, but that thing is a blast to drive. But my thought on why we sort of find things like Raptor and now TRX and stuff like that and Trackhawk and Mustang and Corvette is the ability to modify them. You know, we have so much fun with personalization and saying, hey, you know, we have a 700 horsepower car. I want to make it 800, or I want to make it handle better or drag race better, or, you know, or in Bill's case, I want to put a parachute on my four-door Charger.
I want a caravan with a elephant in it.
Yeah. Ralph Gilles is making I think he's got the Speedcore guys doing a Charger. I think a 69 or 70 Charger with a elephant engine.
Yes, sir.
They're making that for him because, I don't know, he's bored. If you follow him, he was restoring his Alfa Romeo as well. He saw the GTV, I think. I don't know if it was GTA, but that would have been pricey. But GTV, his little Alfa Romeo, he's made himself a little hot rod out of that thing too. So they sound like they're having some fun over there, and that's why we love doing this, because everybody's having a little bit of fun. So
imagine trying that. You have that thing going around a corner with a elephant engine that much weight over the front axle. That's like,
yeah,
that's even going to turn.
I don't know. I mean, it's a big car for sure, the big Charger. I assume they're going to try to move that engine back as far as they can. They're going to dig into the firewall, move that engine back. I mean, if it's just all for looks, then just throw the engine in and you'll be fine. But if you move that thing back 6 inches, it's going to make a huge difference. I mean, you're still going to have a huge, massive car. The Charger is a big car.
Huge.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the one that they did, what was the name of that thing? was it Evolution?
Tantrum?
Was it Tantrum? Or? Yeah. Yeah. That one was just a beautiful example of their engineering capabilities, all the 3D printing and stuff that they did, and the machine work and all the finishes.
The craftsmanship and the final product of that car leads me to believe that I don't give a shit if it turned at all. That thing was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and it looks fantastic. So I could see why Ralph wanted to go to them and say, hey, I want something of my own, and I'm sure he put pen to paper on this one as well, being, you know, a design guy, and you know, had those guys. When I was in Wisconsin visiting Snap-on, I spoke to Dave at Speedcore, and he said, "Oh yeah, tonight I'm having dinner with Ralph. We're going to talk about his car that we're building for him." And I was like, "Oh, that's got to be a fun conversation."
Well, we're going to see in real time how creative they can be and their process. Because if you look on my Instagram, mm-hmm. you'll see the dyno shot of the twin turbo car today.
Yeah.
So it's being finished up. It's going to be shipped out. And the car that you see today, you know, the 2017 skinny tire Charger, is going to undergo a transformation completely 100% in their hands. And like I said, I don't really know what the finished product's going to look like. I don't even know if I'm going to get a rendering. So we're going to see what they can do with a base Charger and put their spin on it, you know, in a 2 month period of time.
Nice. Yeah. A lot of trust you're throwing over there to those guys.
Well, I trust them.
Yeah, they've earned it though. All right. So guys, go to Edmunds.com, and all the new stuff is at Edmunds.com/roadnoise. And, read all about the C8 and the Nissan Rogue. Check out Alistair's video on that, as well as the GT500. More exciting stuff coming from them. We're going to have you back on again, but we're going to wrap it up for now. Let's see. Am I forgetting anything? Is there anything else? That I feel like we're forgetting something, but I don't know what it is. Bill, you're going to have to get us some dyno numbers when you get those for the Charger. I know.
I will post them tomorrow.
Oh, there you go.
Any guessing?
You know, I they're going to do what? They're going to do a pump gas version and an E85 version. So I think they're going to do well, we know there was a target of about 1,500. So I don't think they want to go less than that. So I'm going to say the race gas or E85 version is going to be 1,523. And the pump gas version will be $1,198.
From your mouth to Mario's ear.
I don't know where I got those numbers from, but that's where I'm at with $1,198 and $1,523, I think is what I said.
You're not far off.
Okay. Anything else on Edmunds we should be checking out? What do you guys got coming up?
We also just launched a new feature where you can actually get a cash offer for your car. That's actually worth checking out. So if you're looking to trade in your car or actually just get cash for it, we're now actually offering that facility through the site, edmunds.com/sellmycar. See what we did there? edmunds.com/sellmycar. So that we just introduced that actually recently. And yeah, that's pretty exciting.
That's a pretty good deal because now you could, you know, you don't have to futz around with all the listings and this and that and showing tons of people with the coronavirus risk and all that stuff.
It's a big deal. I mean, you know, you'd expect me to say this, but actually we've seen a big uptick in traffic, just people using a facility like ours. So, cause you can't go around, you know, you don't want to go around 20 different dealerships and kick tires. Actually, you can come to a site like ours and kind of find out everything that you need to know and search for inventory, see what your current car's worth, see what's out there in the market, and pretty much do the whole thing, you know, from your phone or, you know, from your living room.
What's the market right now? Is it a buyer's market or a seller's market? If you've got a used car, do you want to sell?
The value of used cars at the moment, I mean, when Corona first hit, used cars dropped dramatically, and there's a lot of...
It'd be going up now.
And mm-hmm. now they're going up like hell. I mean, I think the average price of used cars is going to be like $2,000 in the last month. So it's definitely a seller's market for if you're sitting on a used vehicle. And, you know, there's arguably there's less good deals around on some of the new stuff, but there's still deals to be done. So yeah, it's a buyer's market right now, but used car values are going crazy, like record highs.
Great. The price of my M3 just went up. All right, guys, we're gonna wrap it up.
Yeah, for some used cars, there's always caveats.
Yeah, there's a few. I guess there's a few caveats. Some of them are also going to be skyrocketing, like my car. All right, guys, thanks a lot. We're going to head over the studio to the next guys, but I appreciate it. Alistair, always a pleasure having you on. And of course, you can follow us. I'm at Motorator on social media. We've got Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter, Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. And Alistair Weaver's plugs are behind my screen, but I'm going to say Alistair Weaver on Twitter and Weaver on Cars.
Weavometer?
Now he changed it. He's Weaver on Cars. on Instagram.
We love you.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Till next time, keep the air, the spare, and the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. And just a reminder that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. And that's 15% on top of the money GEICO could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? This is a deal you won't want to miss. There's never been a better time to switch to GEICO than now. And if you save an extra 15%, if you do it by October 7th. So jump on to GEICO.com to learn more. That's GEICO.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.